At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hello and welcome to the Full of Beans podcast, hosted by myself, Hannah Hickenbotham. Throughout these podcast episodes, we will speak to a range of individuals about their experience of eating disorders, with the aim of increasing awareness and understanding whilst reducing stigma and isolation. Please note that the topics discussed in this podcast may be triggering for some individuals, so tread lightly, check in with yourself, and reflect on these conversations. In this week's episode, I'm joined by Tallulah O'Hea. Tallulah is a body confidence coach and the founder of The Body Conversation, a company dedicated to delivering inspiring, educational and empowering body image workshops for teenage and preteen girls. Driven by a passion for supporting young girls in navigating body image challenges, Tallulah creates a foundation for meaningful discussions about body confidence within schools through her impactful workshops. Inspired by her own transformative journey in redefining her relationship with her body, Tallulah is committed to helping women overcome struggles with body image and cultivating a healthier, more positive connection with themselves. This week, we talk all things body image, how to support young girls with their body image, and also thinking about the year ahead and how we can cultivate more positive body image for ourselves. Hello, my lovely. How are you doing today?
I'm really good. Very excited to be on your podcast after listening to many great people talk on it.
It's so funny because when I asked you, I was like, how have I not asked you before? Like, I feel like, I mean, we haven't really even known each other that long, but it feels like we've known each other a lot longer than we actually have, I think.
Yeah, it's just that like immediate connection. I think we're also both so passionate about the same thing, body image, you know, helping others struggling, and obviously both with lived experience, it kind of like there is that just automatic kind of connection, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, it was it's very nice to have someone that I've connected with so well, and like you say, to share that passion as well is lovely. So for the listeners, do you want to just explain a bit about who you are and what it is that you do?
Yeah, sure thing. So I'm Tallulah. I'm a body confidence coach. Some people are like, what does that mean? And I basically work with predominantly women in their 20s and 30s and help them rebuild the relationship with their body, something I'm so passionate about. And through working with a number of women and realizing pretty much every one of them struggles with body image, starting when they were at school or as a teen, like including myself. I'm not sure about when your journey with body image struggles started, but it is just that teenager age. And so as a byproduct of working as a body confidence coach, I have been really inspired to go into schools and start doing workshops for teens and preteens, and launched my business, which is really exciting, The Body Conversation, in September, which is all about early intervention and prevention of eating disorders and body image struggles amongst teen girls, because that's where I struggled. And so that's kind of what I'm focusing on at the moment, which is really exciting.
It is super exciting. And I have to say, I've loved seeing all of the stuff that you've been putting online, because I think it's so bold and really creative, which I think this sort of thing needs to be to really catch people's eye. But you're so right. I think so many people struggle. That it's that really awkward phase, isn't it? Where like you're, I guess, becoming a woman, quote unquote, your body is changing to become a woman, but your brain is not ready to be a woman. And there's so much pressure around the way that you should look, the way that you should act, the way that you should be. You know, I personally, looking back now, I think that a lot of my struggles came because I was not ready to become a woman. And so I was like, okay, if I
I mean, this is very much like a retrospective like thought process now, but like looking back, I think it was like, if I make myself small, then I don't have to become a woman. I don't have to have a period. I don't have to go through the like changes in my body, because I was so scared about what being a woman meant and things like that. So I think having someone like yourself, there's a very inspirational person, you know, as the person that you are anyway, but then also bringing the awareness that you do and helping people navigate those things. Because I don't think, you know, I mean, the only person I probably would have spoken to it about was my mum. And even then, I think you kind of, you don't even know how to broach the subject sometimes.
Yeah, it's really interesting, because I've done, like, now going into the schools and doing these workshops, it's really made me think back to like, okay, what was going on for me back then, and why didn't I speak to anyone for literally 15 years about how I felt in my body? And it was this, you know, the classic, the shame, the guilt, the, like what you said, maybe it is not wanting to become a woman. Or I remember being really embarrassed about growing boobs in like maybe year 7 or year 8 and growing pubes. I was like, oh my God, I don't want anyone to see. And there's this, I remember having a fear of not wanting to start my period first in my year group. And it's like, where the hell have these fears come from? And I think as well at school, it wasn't really, yes, we had like the kind of the sexual health, you know, chats, but they weren't really, you know, real conversations with young girls about this is really what's going to happen when you go through puberty. Some people grow boobs earlier. Some people start their period when they're 10. Some people start their period when they're 16. Like all these things that we just, it's almost a guessing game. And which is why I'm so passionate about like just bringing this kind of conversation into schools and making it not a taboo. And it's like, we've all been through it. We've all gone through puberty. We've all got boobs. We've all got hair down there. Mm-hmm. It's just, but it's this thing that it's, especially at that age, where it's just so embarrassing. And well, that was my experience. But I think, yeah, there is a lot more in school. I think they are bringing a bit more of that conversation, but it's not something that's prioritized, which I think it should be.
Yeah, it's, I almost cringed there a little bit when you were talking about like your experience of puberty. I remember when I found my first pube and I was like, what the hell is that? And I remember I ran into my mum's room and I was like, there's a hair there. And it's so funny because you've got hair on your head. Like, why are you so shocked by it? And then I also remember, this is so funny, I always laugh about this, because if I could tell myself now, I'd be like, this is what you want, Hannah. Remember my, like, I had quite a lot of leg hair, because again, you start growing leg hair, don't you? It gets thicker, it gets darker, and you're like, what the hell's going on? And my mum bought an epilator, and for starters, that really bloody hurt. But I remember using the epilator, and I sat there and I cried, and she was like, are you okay? Like, is it just really painful? And I was like, what if the hair never grows back? And now I'm like, that is literally what I would love, my hair not to grow back on my legs. But I think you are right. There's so much embarrassment around it. And it's really interesting, though. And I don't know, like, what your thoughts would be around this, but maybe it's like personality types or something. But I do remember at school, like, for me, I was very, very anxious, very introverted. And so the thought of like growing boobs or getting my period or anything like that was really, really difficult. And I didn't want anyone to know. Like, I had my period pretty early. And genuinely, like, I thought it was because I was fat. There was a lot of stigma and stereotypes going around in school of, like, if you're fat, then you get your period first. But then it was interesting because then a lot of the girls in my school that maybe were a bit much more mature than me, they were really proud that they'd got boobs and then they'd got periods. And it was almost like sexualized in a way, because they like went from wearing almost like crop tops to an actual bra, and then all the boys fancied them. But then for me, it was like, oh my gosh, like this is the worst thing that could possibly be happening.
I think there's definitely a personality type in it. I actually on the outside was really confident, you know, didn't have an issue making friends or sporty and everything, but actually on the inside I was really insecure and it was that, and I think that's, I used my external confidence to kind of hide this body insecurity that I had. But it's really interesting you saying that the kind of stigma of being people starting their period of their fat, mm-hmm. or like younger kids who are bigger start their period earlier, because thinking about it, I'm like, maybe that's what was something that was going through my head as well, because obviously, you know, everyone in the class, some of my best friends were just, you know, absolutely tiny. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes felt like, oh God, I'm much bigger than them. And so that definitely, it's really interesting that, because I feel like that definitely plays a part in it. And it's like, again, where does that stigma come from? It's like, where are these messages coming from that we're, you know, we're ingesting and then turning into these like monster fears, mm-hmm. which is what I find like an interesting kind of the interesting narrative to try and unpick, so that we can change the narrative for, you know, girls today.
And from the workshops that you've been doing most recently, like with the teen generation at the moment, what has been those like the biggest narratives that you keep hearing when you're doing your workshops?
I think the big narrative is it's this comparison. Mm. And it's like, and it's really, it's kind of, it's funny because yes, there's social media is obviously a huge thing today, but the issues and the struggles are still the same. Whether you were born 40 years ago, 20 years ago, or 10 years ago, it's still the same issue girls are struggling with. They're changing body, you know, scared of growing boobs or growing pubes, going through puberty and then putting on weight. You know, all these, they're the usual things, but what's come up a lot, which didn't surprise me but is interesting, is it's, I'm not blaming the parents, but a lot of that, like, you know, how the parents are, it's having a knock-on effect on the child. And it's like, we all know that, and you know, now me being a parent, I'm like, you do notice what you say and you're like, oh my God, I can't believe I just said that in front of, yeah, my baby's, he's almost two. So it doesn't matter, who knows, but you do, I'm seeing actually how parents do have a huge impact as role models on their daughters, and I've interviewed quite a few mums for research, and even just asking them like, how's your relationship with your body? And then they go off in this like, hey, you know, I don't like my body, always on a diet, not liking my tummy. It's like, okay, so what are you doing in front of your child that is actually, and without them, you know, they don't mean to cause harm, but until you acknowledge or check in with how you're being, it can be easily kind of missed that mm-hmm. your child is actually sponging everything you're saying, and then that kind of feeds into that. So I think there's like, it's the school environment, social media, and your immediate role models who often are like having these impacts.
Yeah I mean, I couldn't agree more with that. I've spoken about this on the podcast before, but my family has always been very sort of body conscious, very weight focused, and you know, my grandma she was like, you know, the Atkins diet, and every single diet possible, it was a different diet every week. And so my mum was brought up in a household where it was normal for women to diet. And so it's like you say, you can't blame people because that's what they were brought up with. So naturally, you know, that's what they're passing on. And I think until like our generation, where we've been like, hold on, like, why are we hating ourselves so much? Why are we doing this? I don't think people have questioned it, which, you know, I very much, and I don't blame my parents or my mum or anything for this, but, you know, I know that a lot of my insecurities have come from seeing my mum stand in the mirror and, you know, pull out her clothes and say, oh, I don't like this part, or I don't like this part. And it's so difficult to break out of that, because it is ingrained in us to pull ourselves apart and be negative towards ourselves. But I wonder, for the listeners, if people are listening and thinking, oh God, you know, I'm a parent and I really pull myself apart. Like, we're not expecting people to go from a place of like body hatred to body love. But how do you support people in kind of, you know, improving their relationship with their body, so then it has a benefit for their children as well?
I love that question. The big thing that I always say is the goal is not to be in love with your body. The goal is not to strut in the mirror and be like, woohoo, check me out, my body is great. The goal is just acceptance.
Yeah.
And it's just finding that even if that, for example, I used to, my tummy was the part of my body I absolutely hated. That would bring me down. When I looked in the mirror at school, it was just this part of my body. I was like, no. And it's so common for especially women to, you know, hate their tummy or judge their tummy. And what really helped me nurture the relationship with my tummy was actually just looking in the mirror and being like, I can't, hating on it and judging it is not going to change it. And just obviously getting kind of reframing that kind of critical voice to just, I accept my tummy because it digests my food. It's held two babies, especially for parents. And for-
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Women in particular, your tummy, if it is a part you hate, has held babies. Like, it's grown babies, and our tummies aren't meant to be these kind of, you know, cheese grater flat eight packs.
Cheese grater.
We need, I don't know why I use cheese grater, but someone, can you actually help me with this? Because someone, I heard it, I think I must have heard it in a movie, but someone talked about a cheese grater flat tummy. And I actually asked one of my clients, I was like, where has that come from?
I've never heard that before. I'm going to Google this right now.
I might have made that up. But cheese okay, grater. Everyone will remember this now.
This is so funny.
So this kind of, our tummies aren't meant to be, yeah, these kind of eight packs were meant to have a bit of a cushion. They're meant to be slightly curved. And it's just to really, yeah, the goal in summary is to get to a point of acceptance, and it's swapping judgment for appreciation. So it's kind of check in right now with, what are the thoughts that come in about my body? Are they negative? Are they neutral? Or are they positive? If they're more negative, focus on the part that you're, you know, pointing that negativity towards, aka your tummy, your legs, your arms, and then reframe whatever that line is to, I appreciate my tummy, I appreciate my legs, I appreciate my arms because, you know, they allow me to eat. My hands allow me to be creative. If you're an artist, they allow me to type. Whatever it is, it's just really acknowledging the negativity and reframing that to something that's more empowering, because I wish I didn't waste 15 years of my life hating my body. And it's, you know, it's, there's no such thing as a quick fix. It doesn't, you don't suddenly wake up and love yourself, and it's an ongoing journey. It's a goalless journey. It's something that you just need to practice every single day. But if you can just reframe one negative thought you say to yourself about your body to, I appreciate my body, because then you're going to start that journey of actually just being like, my body's just my body. And that's it. We've all got them. We all look totally different. Comparison is a thief of joy and totally pointless. But just reframe the goal from trying to love your body just to trying to accept it.
Yeah. And I think that for me has been the biggest thing in my recovery journey is, you know, some days I do actually look in the mirror and I think, oh, hot damn, I look great today. And other days, like, I'm like, I hate my body and everything about it. But trying to have a more balance, not being so all or nothing, is definitely a better approach. And one thing I found recently is I don't have my period back yet, but I'm definitely getting like PMS symptoms and stuff. Mm. And it's been so interesting. Like last week, for example, I was so bloated and really down and felt really sad. Whereas this week I'm not bloated at all and I feel really good. And I don't like that in itself, because it's like last week when I was bloated and I felt fat, I was sad. This week I don't feel bloated, therefore I feel happy.
Mm.
And it's really moving away from like allowing your the like perception of your body to have kind of such a strong hold on you. But I was going to ask you, you know, how your pregnancy had impacted you, because I know for my mum, she will often say, like, you know, I could hate my stretch marks, but at the end of the day, my stretch marks are what meant that you're in this world. And so how can I possibly hate them? Because, you know, And I remember actually did a podcast with, I think it was with Zoe Burnett ages ago. This is like when I first started the podcast. And she said that that was her daughter's first piece of artwork. And I was like, how beautiful to reframe it in that way of, you know, this is something so special to you. So yeah, it's lovely to hear that kind of your pregnancy as well kind of helped your relationship with your tummy too.
Yeah, definitely. And it's actually, it is amazing when I look at my tummy now, which is an absolute balloon, given the fact I'm giving birth in about a month.
But you popping?
I'm popping in a month. But it is, yeah, when I just look at it, I'm like, oh my gosh, like the woman's body is incredible. And I remember after just giving birth, posting some photos of what my tummy looks like just after you give birth. Because I was always like, what does a pregnancy, like, does your tummy just pop back and, you know, there we go. And it was really interesting, like, watching my tummy kind of gradually go back to its, like, normal kind of looking way. And you do just look at it in a totally different way. It's like, yes, there is an extra bit of cushion and, you know, I might have a bit more on my sides, but it's like, you just, because you've grown a human being, you're like, I can't judge that part of my body anymore because of that experience. But I remember with my first pregnancy after giving birth, in my head, there was a bit of chatter like, okay, I need to like get back and, you know, eat less and all these things. But it's like, if you're breastfeeding and looking after a baby, it's like you need to eat, you need to fuel yourself. So there was this slight conflict, but then I kind of, you know, worked through it and was like, just, you know, your body's incredible, this isn't a time to start worrying about how your body looks. And then it's just kind of letting go of that comparison as well, because you see some pregnant women and it's like, oh my god, I'm, you know, the classic back in my jeans, my tummy's like totally back to normal. And so it's just letting go of that comparison, because everybody's different. And yeah, so no, I've been very grateful that my pregnancies have been smooth and my tummy has just grown beautifully.
Yeah, and that's lovely. And I guess there's so much pressure and worry, I guess, when you've given birth, that you're doing everything right. The last thing that you then need is that worry and pressure to be in, you know, getting back a certain body type. So that's just another thing that you don't need on your list. And I wanted to ask, I guess, like, you know, in the same vein about kind of, I guess, it, moving into the new year, there's always a lot of diet talk and things like that. And so in the same respect of like how you shifted your mindset when you gave birth of like, I'm not going to focus on, you know, dieting and my body and stuff. How do you think, because there's so much chatter about it, I think it's very similar in kind of like when you've given birth, so much chatter about your pre-body weight and stuff. And in the new year, it's the same thing. What sort of stuff do you do to kind of navigate those conversations and, you know, remain in your own lane? Like, you know, I'm not falling back into dieting or things like that, because, you know, that's I appreciate my body more nowadays.
I think it's, and I was actually talking about this with a client last week, it's reframing the conversation you have with your friends and the conversation that, you know, you're having around your body. I always make sure I'll never like, you know, I might judge my body in my head, but I'll never outwardly judge my own body or be like, oh, I'm feeling this, because that feeds the person you're talking to then be like, oh yeah, I'm, you know, I hate my tummy, or I can't wait to start my diet in January or whatever it is. So it's taking control of how I speak about my body and others' bodies so that the conversation is positive. Because there was one of my clients, and she won't mind me sharing this, her group of friends, they are all talking about, like, they've got a chat about losing weight and they kind of joke about like wanting to be skinny and all the, and yes, there's a bit of tongue in cheek in it, which is totally fine, because it doesn't all need to be like serious. But I was like, just really think about what you're bringing to the table as a threesome, because if you're having all this negative chat, even if it's a bit of a joke, it's still, you're still kind of putting fuel to the fire around, you know, a negative body image. So it's really, so I kind of really, and I say it to all my friends, if someone's like judging their body, I'm like, it's just trying to reframe the body conversation, because naturally we automatically will go to, I want to lose weight, or I want to go on this diet, or, you know, let's all do this cleanse together, or whatever it is. And it's just, okay, why do we want to do it? Why do you want to do it? Is it for weight reasons, or is it for nourishing your body reasons? And another really good thing that I've been doing, a binge and emotional eating specialist training. Shout out to Emma Murphy's training. It's amazing. And as part of that training, one of the big questions that just kind of goes through the whole program is, am I nourishing? Am I nourishing or punishing myself? Mm-hmm. And it could be with, and I was like, this is just such a simple question, but it can be applied to like literally everything, especially, let's say I'm going for a pizza later, and, you know, I could be like worried about eating a pizza, and, you know, everything that, all the kind of the conversation around eating a pizza and it being bad for you. But it's like, I love pizza. That is going to be the most nourishing experience with my friends, eating something I love. You know, I leave the dinner, don't even think twice about eating a pizza, go home, and, you know, amazing. Whereas if in my head I was like all worried about eating the pizza and felt like it was punishing, I'd then be wasting so much time and energy punishing myself for eating that pizza. But I think it's not whether it's like nutritionally dense or not. It's about the whole experience. And so it's just, yeah, reframing whether something's nourishing or punishing. And you might think something's punishing, but actually it's unbelievably nourishing emotionally and mentally. And it might not be as nutritionally dense as you like, but the whole experience is giving you so much. And that's what's important.
I love that. And I think that's such a good tool to have if you can be honest with yourself about it. Because like you said, you know, you could go out for something that arguably, like, you know, people may say in society isn't a healthy thing to do, but actually, you know, it's nourishing your soul, and, you know, you're allowing yourself, not allowing yourself, but you're, you know, you're doing that because you want to enjoy yourself. You're seeing your friends, like going out for pizza. Yeah, the pizza's delicious, don't get me wrong, but like, it's so much more than that. It's connecting with people, and you've not got that voice in your head, you know, like you said, telling how bad you are or what have you. So you're not punishing yourself in that way. But equally, from the flip angle, I think one thing that a lot of people struggle with is like so many behaviors nowadays that are quote unquote normalized as like being healthy or what have you, they are actually punishing behaviors, but they're, you know, like eating clean or over exercising, things like that. It's so easy to run away with yourself and think, oh, I'm having this salad because I'm being healthy. Whereas actually, you know, if you're starving yourself and you're not satisfied from that, then that is punishing. Or if you're going to exercise and you're absolutely exhausted and burnt out, but you feel like you need to go, that's also punishing. So I love that kind of nourishing or punishing. So I think if you can be honest with yourself, that's a really good way of determining, like, is this a health promoting behavior or is this something I'm doing to hurt myself because of, you know, whatever's going on? And then I guess that gives you like a starting point to then look deeper into, you know, why do I think this is punishing or nourishing based on what it actually is?
And I think that the exercise thing as well is really interesting, because again, it's like someone, it's like running, for example. You waking up forcing themselves out for a run, and it'd be like, you know, this is really good for me, I'm going to feel great after, which you probably will. But it's like, if you're stressed before you've even gone on that run and you're forcing your body out and you're tired and you're not actually tuning into, is this run going to be nourishing or punishing for me? Then again, it's like, it's really, yeah, tuning in with, do I actually want to do this? Is this actually going to give me what I want? Or is this coming from a place of punishing myself? So yeah, I think the exercise thing's a really interesting area with that as well, because it's like, exercise is a self-care practice. It's not a punishing practice. Mm. I think a lot of people punish themselves with the exercise they're doing. And if you ask, you know, half the spin class, do you actually enjoy coming here? They're like, no, I don't. But I've got to, because it's going to help me lose weight, or it's going to, and obviously everyone's on their journey and, you know, do what you've got to do. But it's just, if all your practices are nourishing, you're going to be in such a good state of mind.
Yeah.
You know, 90% of the time, then rather than punishing.
And I think it is hard because I think, you know, we can all admit that sometimes if you, you know, when you first get to a spin class or you go for a run, sometimes I don't want to do it. Like, you know, and sometimes it is about, you know, really knowing, like, am I not wanting to do this right now? Because I just can't really be asked and, you know, want to do something else. Or is it like I'm actually trying to punish myself here for something that I've done? I think that's something that I've actually really struggled with in recovery because exercise was always something I used as a punishment. And so I've really tried to reframe my relationship with exercise. And running in particular was something I did as a punishment. And I've actually started running a bit with my partner. And that for me is very nourishing because we're getting out, we'll go together, we'll stop and have a coffee along the way. And the fact that I can stop and that I can have a coffee and then carry on and chit chat to him and go at his pace, they're all signs to me that I'm like, no, this is okay because I'm being really flexible with this. But sometimes I do put my shoes on. I'm like, oh, I can't be asked to do this. But I know that I'm still checking in along the way to make sure that I'm doing it for the right reasons.
Yeah, there's a line, you know, there's waking up and going for a run and it's wet and cold, but you're like, actually, I know I'm going to feel so good after this.
Yeah.
It's like fabulous. But it's if you're, let's say you've eating the pizza the night before and you're like, I need to go on a run, and you're like, you're stressfully pushing your body to do something as a byproduct of something where you think you've punished yourself, then that's where it's like, just check in, just like, what's going on for you? But yeah, I mean, definitely forcing myself to spin class and then always loving it.
Yeah.
It's the early wake up and you're like, I know I am going to enjoy this.
Yeah.
And then after you're buzzing. Yeah.
And I guess with that, I mean, when you do the body conversation at schools and stuff, what do the teen girls, what's their sort of relationship with exercise? Have you seen a lot of kind of punishing behaviours there, or does it tend to be quite neutral?
Yeah, to be fair, it hasn't actually, I wouldn't be able to give you a solid answer because it's not something I've personally dived into with the girls. But I think, again, as we've seen in the news and all the research, more and more girls are avoiding physical exercise because of the relationship they have with their body. So the stats are there to show that, you know, exercise is something that, or the relationship with their body is something that has an effect on how much exercise they do. But I remember at school, like, going swimming was literally the worst nightmare ever, and half of us would pretend we're on our periods so we can't go swimming. And
I was gonna say, did like, you also have your period every week?
Yeah, it was like a never-ending period for 3 years. But so there's, again, it's just that, like, empowering girls to embrace their bodies, to be like fit and healthy and strong, and, you know, looking at sport as a way to energize and give you that endorphin hit and make you feel good, rather than it being this thing that's like, oh God, I'm gonna have to get my body out. Am I gonna be the slow one? Or, you know, whatever thoughts come into their mind. But that's just, another area that is really important to touch on as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I remember every week, I'd like the whole class, all the girls had their period when it was the swimming lessons. And I remember the teacher one day being like getting really angry, like, you can't all be on your period, da, 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 da. And, you know, I guess it is frustrating as a teacher because you know that they're lying. But with that in mind, what would your kind of top advice be to teachers that are working with young girls to encourage them with body image and their relationship with self?
I think it's hard for teachers. Firstly, it's because bringing the body conversation into the kind of classroom or into the, I don't know, into the swimming pool area, it is like they can't just bring it up. Mm-hmm. But I think it's having the conversation, it's bringing the conversation to like PSHE. And, you know, if you're at a boarding, if your teacher working at a boarding school, then it's having these conversations, you know, having like a body pledge board in the schoolhouse, where it doesn't matter if you're at boarding school or not, and having like a board where it's like everyone puts their body pledge for the year down, especially what I've been doing with some of the teachers where I've been doing workshops kind of this side of the year, it's getting the girls to think about, okay, what are some really positive body image goals that you can set as a school year that you can bring into the term in January. And so it's kind of thinking of, without directly having the body image chat, because a lot of teachers, it's just awkward and uncomfortable. It's like, okay, how can you bring it in a way that's like, it's not intense, no one's put on the spot, but it's just this really, it's this idea of like, as a community, we're all going to strive to create a more positive body image environment at school. And, you know, it could be coming up some classroom rules around, okay, so no one's allowed to judge one another. We've got to celebrate each other's bodies. You know, before everyone goes swimming, we can all say something positive about our body. And it's just thinking creatively about how you can kind of bring the positive conversation into the classroom without it being something that makes the teacher or the pupil feel uncomfortable, which is why my workshops kind of work well, which is why teachers are kind of like, oh yes, you come in, because that then starts the conversation. So then, as off the back of doing a workshop, it's like, okay, so Tallulah spoke about these things, how can we, you know, incorporate these into our day-to-day school life, and where do we need to, like, what do we need to work on? So it kind of, that's my idea of doing the workshops. It's helping, it's supporting the teachers bring that conversation into the school, because it is hard to just kind of sit them down and be like, right, how are we feeling in our bodies? What do we need to do? Because they're like, and it is uncomfortable to talk about.
Yeah, and I think, like when we said earlier, I think often people don't know how they feel in their body. Like, it's a weird concept, isn't it? When you're initially thinking about it, it's like, oh, I don't know how I feel in my body. Like, quite awkward most of the time. Like,
yeah,
I don't know what's going on. And so then for an adult to ask you that question, it's like, oh my God, this is strange, especially like your teacher. Whereas I think you coming in and it being like the purpose of why you're coming in and having such like an open conversation about it takes that awkwardness away. And then, like you say, allows for that further conversation. So I think that's really good. And I imagine as well that really not only at school will promote that conversation, but, you know, if kids are going home and parents are saying, oh, what did you learn today? Then it's opening up that conversation at home as well with siblings and parents and stuff. And I imagine, you know, that was a really healthy conversation to be having rather than suppressing those thoughts and thinking that you're the only person in the world that feels uncomfortable in their body.
Exactly. And as part of the body conversation, I do parent workshops as well, because I'm so passionate about getting the parents on board. So it's a kind of 360 approach to the monumental mission of changing the negative body image narrative. But, and also with the parent workshop, and like I said at the beginning, it's like asking parents, like, you know, how do you feel in your body? Like, what are the thoughts that come up for you when you think about your body? And then it's like, okay, if you're thinking this, and, you know, these are some of the struggles you're having, what do you think your daughter might be going through or your son might be going through? And it's kind of, it's really just getting people to kind of critically think. It's like, okay, yeah, there are negative thoughts about my body, like, and taking action on that. Because it's so normalized to judge our bodies, not like how we look, compare our bodies, you know, all these things we experience, you know, all the time. But it's just having that like constant reminder of like, actually the voice in my head is not nourishing me, it's not getting me anywhere. And so by kind of, it's what I do with the kids, rather than saying how are you feeling in your body, it's like, think about your body and what the thoughts that come up, you know, are they negative or positive, and then kind of going from there. And there's, I think as well with parents, and they're like, how do we, you know, bring the conversation to the dinner table, for example? And it's like, you don't need to sit down and be like, right, let's talk about bodies tonight. Yeah. How's everyone feeling? And it's like, you know, you could be driving your child to school and just be like, you know, how's school going? How's, you know, and start talking about, you know, how your friend's doing, you know, how you're feeling at school, and then slowly building, you know, nurturing that conversation to then get to body image. If there is a worry, or you are kind of worried that your child is showing signs of body image struggles, it's like, just have a conversation in the car. You're both looking forward. No one is not intense. Or go on a walk, or just do something where you're both active, and just, you can just bring the conversation in that way, rather than it being like, let's sit down and talk, which my dad did. And I was like, I'm fine. And then eventually crumbled. But yeah, that was a very long-winded answer to your question.
I think it was really helpful. And I like the tip of doing it in the car. I remember my mum having a lot of conversations with me in the car. So clearly she got that tip from someone else as well. But it's a very good idea, because like you say, there's a distraction. You don't have to have that awkward eye contact and that pressure. And I think sometimes as well, just not even, you know, like you say, directly asking people, but just opening up that conversation so that they, you know, your kids know that you are there if they want to talk about things like that. I mean, if they are, you know, feeling good, bad or indifferent or whatever, then, you know, it's a space where they can chat. So yeah, I think the work that you're doing it's just absolutely amazing. And, you know, I also think that, like, no better person could do it, because you have such a good personality, and I feel like young girls will connect with you so well. So it's really lovely to chat to you. Where can people go to find out more about the Body Conversation and get involved with it?
So my website is www.thebodyconversation.co.uk. Very easy. And then Instagram is just @TallulahOhay. And next year, the focus is really supporting parents with the body conversation in school. So that's kind of what I'm re-navigating my Instagram platform for. But yeah, the website and Instagram are the main places you can find me. So if anyone can connect me to a school, let me know.
Yes, absolutely. Well, thank you so much. And this podcast is going to be released the day before New Year's Eve. So I guess Happy New Year.
Oh my gosh, Happy New Year. Bring on 2025. A lot of body appreciation. Body love. No, body acceptance is the goal for everyone. Amazing. Thank you so much.
If you enjoyed listening today, you won't want to miss next week's episode. So be sure to subscribe. Eating disorders are crippling illnesses, but with the right support, they can be recovered from. We really hope you enjoyed this episode, but if you require more support right now, please look into charities such as First Steps and Beat for support, or talk to someone you trust.